fans, and welcome to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me is the former skipper of the New York Mets, analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, and a true baseball lifer, Mr. Terry Collins. Terry, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, John. Good to be back on the air and looking forward to a good show today.
Absolutely. Another week's in the books. The season's flying by. We have another episode today with another pretty cool guest.
Yeah, can't wait. John Gibbons, the Mets bench coach and former Toronto Blue Jays manager and one of my former player, minor league players, who I've been friends with for years. Loved to have him on my team. Always followed his career intently, and one of the real fun-loving guys in the game. I'm looking forward to having him on.
Yeah, I'm especially looking forward to this one today as well. It reunites me with my old roomie from the 1981 Shelby Mets, my first baseball podcast partner as well. So it should be a really cool talking with TC today. But let's get right into the leadoff. The Mets just returned from a grueling 10-game road trip, 4 cities, 3 time zones. And the Mets, to me, looked kind of fatigued as they ended the trip going 4-6. They got swept by the Mariners this weekend, scoring just 1 run in those 3 games. Terry, how does a road trip the Mets just concluded, how does that wear down a team, and how do you bounce back up from that?
Well, it is. It is grueling, and that's especially at this time of year when you have to make those coast-to-coast trips because they're hard. But when you fly into a town, you know, yeah, they went to, you know, Anaheim, and then they had to fly back to St. Louis, and it's the rest time that's involved. You know, these guys, and I know they get on, they've got their, you know, charter jet, and they get on it, and they can relax. But, you know, they're still young guys. They're still, you know, the adrenaline hasn't gone away yet from the game itself. So it's not like they can just lay down and get 8 hours of sleep. So that changing that many time zones can be tough on you, especially on your body. But that is part of baseball, and that's why, you know, when you're on those coasts, and I happen to manage on each coast. I managed in L.A. for a while. I managed, of course, a long time in New York. And those coast-to-coast trips can beat you up a little bit. But you know what? It's baseball, and you got to be able to bounce back from it. Yesterday they had a day off. Hopefully guys got some rest, got some nutrition, and get ready to go tonight.
And some home cooking because they're back home for a really big homestand, 9 games coming up. But as you always say, Terry, you know, no one's going to feel sorry for you, you know, so you got to tough it up. As we tape, the Mets are neck and neck with the Atlanta Braves for that third wild card spot. Arizona and San Diego have been playing amazing baseball, winning almost every day. They're now 4 games up on the Mets and the Braves. St. Louis and San Francisco are breathing down the necks of New York, and the Reds, Pirates, and even the Cubs are still in the hunt too. Terry, I mean, this wild card race is incredible, especially with, you know, the new rules that took place with the extra wild card team. Have you ever seen a race this close with so many teams bunched up like this in August?
I have not, and that's what that extra wild card game provides, and I think it's great for baseball. And I know, you know, yes, and I'm a traditionalist, but I spent so many years in the minor leagues where you had half a season where you'd play 70 games in the first half and then start fresh in the second half for 70 more games, and it kept the towns interested. So here you have all these great big league cities where there's a lot of towns that are still excited about their team, but possible playoff spot. And we saw last year what happened when the Diamondbacks got in as a wild card team. They got to the World Series. So getting in is what it's all about. So I think it's very cool. I think it's big. Those last 2 months when you go to the ballpark and each and every night those games mean something, that's an exciting time for baseball.
Yeah, and the Mets have a very challenging rest of the month, but they're home for 9 games this week, 3 with the A's, 3 with the Marlins, 3 with Baltimore. The A's have been playing some good baseball over the last month. The Orioles are neck and neck with the Yankees in the AL East, battling for first place. So it's not going to get any easier for the Mets. It is a big week. What would you consider kind of a success this week, this 9-game homestand coming up? How many wins do the Mets need to be comfortable and stay right in there? How many games do you think they need to win this week?
Well, you know, again, John, I don't know if you can ever put a number of games on. The one thing you don't want to do is lose ground. So yeah, and you know, when you talked about this 9-game homestand, I think it's big because you're playing two teams that you know you should beat. I mean, if you have if you play your kind of game, you know, the A's, yeah, they've been playing better, but they're still not a they're not in any division race, not in any wild card race. The same with the Marlins. You know, they sold off half their club here this year. So those are two teams that you got to. So when you look up at the end of this 9 games, but Baltimore, that's going to be a tough one. Then you go on an absolute grueling road trip. So
Yes.
all you want to do when you get through these next 9 games is hope you pick up a game, but don't lose a game. And so then when you get into that grueling road trip, that's where a lot of things are going to happen.
Yeah, and it looks like that road trip at the end of the month. I mean, you're playing Arizona, you're playing San Diego, and then you finish up with the White Sox, who may actually beat the Mets' all-time losing record this year, the way they're going. But yeah, it's a grueling schedule, and that could tell the tale of the season when you're playing the Diamondbacks and the Padres. So we all look forward to seeing what's going to happen with this team by the end of the month. But it is, as you said, very, very exciting. Terry, as you know, I was in New York last week meeting with Mariano Rivera for a future Tunnel of the Towers videotaping. And last Tuesday, New York Yankee great Paul O'Neill was so generous with his time, inviting us to White Plains to shoot his PSA with the T2T team. He shared some amazing 9/11 stories. He was part of that Yankee team in 2001. Do you know either Rivera or O'Neill?
I know both. As a matter of fact, I will tell you, Paul O'Neill, as you know, was not just a great Yankee, he was a great Cincinnati Reds too. He was a very, very good player. And I will tell you, if there was one guy, John, that I never wanted to face in the ninth inning with the game on the line, it was Paul O'Neill. This guy got big hit after big hit. I don't care who was on the mound, lefty, righty. Paul O'Neill, and when it was crunch time, got big hits. Now, when you're on the other side of the field, he was one of those guys, you know, complained to the umpires endlessly. You know, nothing. If he took a pitch, it wasn't a strike. They might have called it a strike. But I will tell you one thing: he was a great teammate and a tough, tough opponent. And obviously, Mariano is one of the classiest human beings on the face of the earth. And nobody wanted to face him. And I'll tell you, when you scored a run off Mariano Rivera, that made the road trip. So
Yeah.
those were two good guys you could deal with.
Yeah, he was impossible. What a reliever he was. What a career he's had. And what a gracious individual he is as well. I was at, he has two car dealerships up in the New York area, and one was on Long Island. That's where I met him. And it was amazing to see him, you know, signing autographs for the people that were there, and their Long Island policemen that were there. There was like 10 of them there that he took pictures with. So just to spend a few minutes with him and discuss T2T, Tunnel of the Towers. What a gracious individual. And they are so happy that he's going to be part of, I think, their first Hispanic language PSA. So we'll be putting that together the first part of September. But we also learned this week that the first responder hockey teams from across the New York area will be competing for the Heroes Cup at the Menin Arena in Morristown, New Jersey. This is a must-see event. It's going to take place Saturday, September 14th, and proceeds will benefit Tunnel of the Towers. And then, of course, that big smart home dedication Wednesday, August 14th, is coming up in Utah for Air Force Technical Sergeant Jesse Clark. And Jesse was left paralyzed by a brain tumor linked to the chemical explosion during the Gulf War. TC, since its inception, it's amazing to know that Tunnel of the Towers Foundation has now provided 1,200 mortgage-free homes to Gold Star and falling first responder families with young children. And Terry, I have to tell you that we talk about these PSAs a lot. And today, right here on the Terry Collins Show, a new PSA is going to debut, and it features one Terry Collins. So let's go to that right now.
Hi, I'm Terry Collins, former manager of the New York Mets. Tunnel to Towers Foundation gives the city of New York something they can actually hold on to that's really a part of them. You know, my dad was a vet, and if you've not been in the service, you have no idea what it means to sacrifice everything for a group. Those are the real heroes in the world. Let's go Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Go to t2t.org for more information about how your donation can make a difference.
I remember when we shot this with you down in Florida back in March, it was also the first time we met face to face. So how does it feel to see your spot for the first time?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it's, you know, John, I will tell you, because I've done some things with them since we did that PSA, my respect for them has grown enormously. I've experienced it firsthand. I've talked to people who have benefited from T2T, their help, and some of the vets, some of the first responders. It is truly, truly one of the class foundations in the world.
Yeah, it's an honor to work with them and have them associated with this show for sure. Terry, we're going to check out This Week in Mets History, and we only have one thing to reminisce with you about. On August the 12th, 2015, Yoenis Cespedes hits his first home run as a New York Met. Cespedes wore a bright yellow arm sleeve that matched the color of a parakeet that kind of escaped at Citi Field that night. The parakeet became affectionately known as the rally parakeet among the Mets faithful. So why don't we reminisce and take a look at that clip right now.
The rally parakeet once tonight when they scored twice in the fourth. Cespedes drives one, deep right center field, headed back toward the wall, it's out of here! Yoenis Cespedes with his first home run as a New York Met. The rally parakeet lives, 3-0 New York.
There you go. Little chin music. And a home run. Number 19 on the year for him here.
His first in the National League. Breaking ball, not a bad one. Stayed in. That's where he'd like to see him go.
You know, that was kind of crazy, Terry. I mean, that, because they were focusing on that bird like the whole game. This bird was flying around, it was landing here, and Cespedes has the same color as this bird. I mean, that's one of the craziest things that I've ever seen.
Somebody got a picture of it, and I think I don't know how many guys put it in their locker, you know, and of course Cespedes. If you go just look at the replay, it'll tell you how dynamic he was. That pitch was not a very good pitch to hit out of the ballpark. I mean, it just tells you how powerful he was. So, but it was cool. You know what? Even to this day, when I see him, he may show up with that yellow arm guard on and go play golf. So, yeah, that was a cool night. And I tell you what, that was what an exciting time that was.
Yeah, that was a magical moment and a magical season for sure. Well, Terry, you can check out Mets History. We all can anytime on social media by going to @NYMHistory on both X and Instagram. And Terry, without any further ado, it's time to get to our Talking with TC special guest. Our special guest today on Talking with TC was a former first-round draft pick of the Mets back in 1980, the third selection behind second-round pick Billy Bean, or actually in the first round, but the second selection for the Mets, Billy Bean, and the number one pick that year, Daryl Strawberry, not bad company for our guest to be around. In 1980, he is a member of the 1986 World Championship Mets, a longtime manager in their minor league system, who went on twice to manage the Toronto Blue Jays, where he remains a cult hero in the country of Canada. He was hired by the Mets, come back to the organization this season, and serves as the bench coach for Carlos Mendoza. His 2023 memoir, Gibby, Tales of a Baseball Lifer, documented his long career in the game. He's my former roommate, and from 2022 to 2023, our host, I had the honor of co-hosting the Gibby Show podcast with him. It's a pleasure to bring on to Talkin' with TC Gibby, Mr. John Gibbons. Welcome to Talking with TC, Mr. John Gibbons.
Hey, well, it's about time you guys had me on here, for crying out loud. The season's almost over.
Yeah.
It's good to see everybody. I go way back with TC. I don't know if everybody knows that. You know, he was my manager in 1988, Albuquerque Dukes. I got traded in spring training for Craig Shipley. And I went over there, and it was a pleasure to get to know him. I got to say this. TC was the hardest working guy I ever played for in baseball. And the guy, nobody cared more about doing things right. And I'm sure he'll mention some things today in our show. But it was an honor and pleasure. You know, I didn't play real well for him. It was a stop along the way for me. But I got a lot of great memories. We had a good team.
John, nice to have you on. Thanks for doing this. I know you're coming off a long road trip. You're probably exhausted. So taking the time out is certainly, we really appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, T, you know what? The thing about being exhausted, I tell people this all the time. The bench coach job is a job to have, man. You know, it's like, you know, when the game's over, you got to go in there and talk to the media, especially in a town like this. The bench coach, he goes home and especially you get a little older and you have this job, you got other people around there doing all of the dirty work that those guys used to do. And it's been a pretty good gig. I've enjoyed it, you know, we got a team that's in this thing. It's going to be an interesting final month and a half.
So, John, you know, obviously you managed a long time. You've had bench coaches yourself, probably different guys. So how's it been being the bench coach for a first-year manager?
You know, T, it's funny. When he first got the job, I didn't know Carlos. And the thought crossed my mind, well, maybe they'll hire a guy that's been around a while, right? Because I was looking to get back into the game. And you know, sure enough, it was just a passing thought, right? And then a couple guys connected me with him, and I ended up getting this job here. And I thought, you know what, if anything I can give him, I've been through a lot, you know, in this game. I've seen a lot, and I'll give him some advice if he wants it. You know, you know how it is. It's a feeling out process, you know, because the guys that get hired to manage in the game, I mean, they're, you know, they know what's going on, right? And they don't always need a lot of advice or a lot of input, because sometimes you can throw – you can give them too much, right? Or you can try to be overbearing. So I just said, I'll sit back and wait and see what Carlos wants out of me. And if he asks me some questions during the game, this or that, or keep an eye on some things, I'll do it. It's worked out tremendously. You know, he's number one, he's a great dude, you know, good man. He's a good baseball guy. And, you know, he's given me a lot of respect, you know, for my length of time in the game. And, you know, he asks me bits and pieces every now and then, I give him my opinion. No, but you know, he runs the game, and I think he's done a very good job. He really has, and he's made it easy. And so, you know, I go back, I prepare like the game, like I would if I was managing. And if something comes up, and he asks me on the spot, I tell him what I think I would do, and then you know, of course, he makes his own decision.
You know, John, obviously, you know, from transfer when you first started managing in the minor leagues, and then you got to the big leagues as a manager, you know, the game has really evolved. Some of the new rules, some of the, you know, the way the game is being played today, has it been tough, you know, from the kind, because, you know, yeah, you did play for me, and I will tell you, I loved it. I loved every second having you on the club. But has it been tough? Has it been a tough change to see the way the game has evolved today?
Yeah, T, it is. You know, it's completely different. You know, you mentioned the rules, right? You know, the only rule I really like is the pitch clock, right? And even at first, I thought I wasn't a big fan of it when I was on the outside looking in, because I knew I had pitchers in the past that had trouble when they worked too fast, right? Even though I thought it would benefit from them, and they needed to take their time, I thought, well, why punish a guy that this makes him successful, right? But it does pick up the pace of the game, and I think that's worked fine. As far as, you know, some of the rule changes, I don't like, you know, being an ex-manager like you, I don't like the three-batter minimum. I think that kind of hamstrings you a little bit as far as strategy-wise. You know, I never liked to play at the home plate and the sliding rule at second, because, you know, those were big parts of the game, the aggressive parts of the game that people love, you know. And I think we got a little bit soft as an industry, so you know, and now analytics, you know, the big part, you know, is really big, right? And I've had to adjust to that and learn some new things. I still can't figure out all the terminology they use, you know. But you know what? It's just the most important thing of all. It goes back to the basics. The teams that pitch better, they hit better, they field, they do all the fundamental things. Those are the teams that are going to come out on top. You know, we get some benefits from all the new info. But you still got human beings got to still go out there and play and execute, and the teams that do it better, they win.
You know, I agree with you. I go back many years ago to where Walter Alston, when I first started managing in the minor leagues, you know, he had retired as the big league manager in Los Angeles, and he was kind of going through, and he told me one time, he said, you know, no matter what you say, no matter what you do, no matter how much you think you can get, you know, certain guys better, and maybe you'll get some guys better, but talent's going to win. Talent's always going to play. And I always thought that. So, John, you know, I don't, since I'm not in the locker rooms anymore, and I read papers and I listen. So one of the things I knew for a long time, John, managing, is that players got sick of meetings. They don't, you know, the more meetings you had, there were more problems. So, but I'm hearing today there's like a hitter's meeting every day. Is that true? Is that what goes on? And I mean, those guys got to get, for years ago, guys used to keep books on every pitcher. They knew what they were going to face. Are there that many meetings that are taking place before a game?
Yeah, it's a real quick one. They just go over there and they go over the pitch, that day's pitcher, maybe some tendencies or things like that. And then I think most of the work's done. You know, the hitting coaches will you know, go up to whoever it might be and say, hey, this is how he's probably going to approach you. But they kind of get together. I don't know if that's standard everywhere, but our guys get together for a little short, quick meeting. You know, I'm with you. You know, it used to be. It's almost like when you have a child, right? So the more you talk, the less they listen, I thought, you know. But that's, I mean, that's big in the business nowadays. There's no question about it. And when you mentioned Walter Alston and talent, TC, I got a quick funny story that this is analytics at its best, in my opinion, right? Remember Big Frank Howard, Hondo, everybody knows Frank, right? Frank, I was sitting in spring training when he was a coach for the Mets here back in, I was sitting there one day and he said, son, he said, you look in your dugout, you got two cannons. Then you look in the other dugout and they got five or six cannons. He said, you may win a battle, you ain't winning no war. And I said, that's it, summed up right there. In 162 games, the team with the most talents usually come out on top. You know, I think there's a couple teams that overachieve every year, a couple that underachieve, but you find your level at 162 games regardless.
I totally agree. I mean, I'm looking at, I did a show the other day where they were talking about, you know, the Mets are back in it. And I said, listen, this game, you say it every year, you know, every team, and I'm sure you said it in Toronto in spring training. Hey, look, you know, we're all going to win 50. We're all going to lose 50. It's those other 50 games when we compete, we don't make mistakes. We got a better chance to win those. That's the determining factor. And you look it up now, here you are. You guys had a real tough May. And now all of a sudden you're right back in it. The Phillies are starting to struggle like crazy now. The Braves are starting to struggle like crazy now. So all of a sudden, you know, it's not just a wild card you're looking at. You guys are in the hunt, man. You're seven games out with a lot of games to play. And, you know, you get on one of those, you know, 15-5 streaks, and you may look up and you're two games out.
Yeah, AT, you're right. We're right in this thing. You know, we got a good ball club. We really do. You know, April, first homestand, you know, we started off, you know, it was a tough start, right, obviously. And then, but we withered the storm, and then May was brutal. That's where I got to give, you know, Carlos Mendoza a lot of credit, you know, especially for a first time doing it. I mean, we could have disappeared. I mean, we could have been irrelevant. I mean, there was talk around town anyway about selling at the trade deadline, right? You know, that back then, because that's how bad things were going. But, you know, he stayed steady. He stayed positive. And, you know, he won these guys over, and sooner or later things started to turn, you know, because we had too much talent, you know, to disappear that early and not be relevant, you know. And so I got to tip my hat to Carlos, you know, because we could have very easily disappeared. But he just showed, you know, what he's got inside of him. Right. You know, I mean, he could have panicked and lost it himself and said, you know what? And who knows what our record would be right now, but so he earned his stripes there, and he kind of showed he's got what it takes, you know. But yeah, you're right. With 6 weeks left, you know, month and a half, anything can happen, you know. And so coming out of the All-Star break, we just been playing, you know, 500 ball, I think probably. So we're due to get hot again because we were smoking going into it, you know. And the games, it's a game of ups and downs, you know. It'll be an interesting ride this final month and a half.
Yeah, I really thought, you know, I know it was a tough road trip, but I looked and I said, you know, I'm not trying to put down any team. I know with any team at any night, we saw it yesterday with what the White Sox did at the Yankees yesterday. So at any time, you can get beat by the team on the other side of the field because they're big leaguers too. But I mean, you got two teams coming out of this tough trip after a day off that, you know, these are the teams you got to beat. you got to beat these teams, because when you get against those good teams, you know, they're tough. Those are tough games to win. So I hope right. you guys get off to this great start, you know, and I hope tonight, you know, you got a pitcher I'm not very familiar with, but you kind of like the matchup coming from that. He's got to know the A's better than anybody on your team.
Yeah, exactly. And they also know him, you know, that's you know what, TC, you're so right that, you know, there's certain teams you got to beat, you know, I mean, you're not going to necessarily win all the games, but especially when you're playing at home. And I think, you know what, I think we've been basically a 500 team at home, you know, a few games over. That's where you got to make our hay. So this is, you know, two teams that, well, you should beat, but then there's no guarantees. And then Baltimore comes in to finish it off. And then, you know, we test it again because we go right out back out west. We go to San Diego before, then Arizona, the teams in front of us, and then finish in Chicago. So this month of August, testing us, and, you know, we'll have a better idea where we stand at the end of that.
Yeah, you know, John, I always loved it. This is, you know, this time of year, everybody's starting to get a little tired and a little worn down. But when you're in a pennant race, man, you that extra energy, you come to the ballpark every day and you can sense it. You can feel in the clubhouse. There's energy flowing. You know, you get beat. Hey, look, they're ready to come back tomorrow because they can. You know, it's just a great atmosphere to be in. And I think it's great you're there because I know your background and I know your energy level. And, you know, I'm sure it's really fun. And, well, there's a couple of guys you got to get going, but I really like where you're sitting right now.
Yeah, T, I agree with you. You know, as long as you've been around the game, you know, we've all seen it. We've seen enough of how this plays out, you know, and your big boys, you know, usually rise to the occasion when it matters and here at the end. And you know, like I said, we've always liked our team. I mean, we got a good ball club top to bottom. Now we just got to play it out.
Yeah, I had, you know, I did an interview with Carlos and I was last week and I felt bad for him, John. I mean, you guys made so many bullpen changes. I told him, I said, I'm really glad you guys got names on the back of your uniform so you know who the hell you got.
I agree with you. I still don't know them all. You know, he does, but I know. See, you were definitely speaking to me there. You know, the bullpen game is so important nowadays. You know, I mean, we look at the, you know, starters only go so far now. So you're using three or four a night. Even, you know, a good night and a bad night. So those guys get used up pretty hard. And so there's guys coming and going left and right. And usually that's probably going to determine what happens to, you know, to all the teams in the race right now, when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I mean, bullpens now, they are the keys to the clubs. I mean, you know, these starting pitchers are so, you know, they're so, set on pitch counts and, you know, they're trying to make sure everybody stays healthy. You know, and I'll tell you, years and years ago, I did a medical seminar with Dr. Joe, and he said to me after we were all done talking about how to take care of pitchers, and he said, you know, Terry, in all my years in medicine, I'm going to tell you this, if they're going to break, they're going to break. I don't care what you try to do to protect them, you know, so, you know, and so I just said, you know what, I've got to, you know, that being said, I'm going to try to get them in shape, and then I'm just going to pitch them the way they're supposed to be pitched, so.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, the arm wasn't meant to be, you know, throw 100 miles an hour, right? Sooner or later, it's got to get you. That's in the, you know, and it's almost sometimes better now that it happens early, and they, you know, these new surgeries that, you know, have done a wonderful job, you know, and these guys bounce back as good as ever. But I think we gotten to the point where we really try to overprotect guys, and it's inevitable anyway, right?
And so.
You know, what are you going to do? But that's kind of the nature of the beast right now.
Yeah. Well, I know John's got some great questions for you, Gibby, so I'm going to turn it over to him. Let him beat you up a little bit.
All right, okay.
Well, I tell you, first thing I want to talk about is I heard you on a podcast yesterday, and I know how much you love traditional country music and Southern rock, and you said something that was pretty interesting, that you wake up every morning humming a song called OMG, John.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to me, man. Hey, I tell you what, you know, I got to believe you might be doing it too, being the huge Mets guys you guys are. I mean, but it's catchy. Ole Iglesias came up with a song, you know, he's got a music group, but it's really done something to us, you know. Now that I'm getting a little older, I figured I'd be too old for that kind of stuff. But it's been catchy. And I'll tell you, TC is another thing too. You know, we talk about talented teams, this and that. Iglesias showed up, right? And he was kind of, we were kind of sputtering at the time. I don't remember exactly when he showed up, but he like united us, you know. I mean, everybody loved him, and just something changing. Yeah, I'm not saying you could pinpoint it just to him doing it, being here, right? That's not it. But there's something he did to this team, and then of course you throw that song in there. Bottom line is, if he wasn't a productive player, it wouldn't matter anyway. He'd have been gone, right?
But you know, John, if you think about it, here's a guy who's got 14 years in the big leagues, 14. And so he joins the team, and I saw him last year in camp with the Marlins when I was helping Kim Engen. You know, a very friendly guy, very outgoing. But here's a guy with 14 years who now has been re-energized because he's gotten a chance to get back to the big leagues. And now his respect for the game, it spreads in the clubhouse, saying, hey, don't take this for granted, guys, because you look up as it happened to him the last couple of years, it goes away. And so you bring a guy with that kind of a background in your clubhouse, he's got to make a difference.
Oh yeah, T, you're right on. It's been amazing. You know, he's united these, and he's played. You know, we saw him in spring training. I mean, he played good, but you know, we didn't expect this. At least I didn't expect this. And I tell you what, I saw him, for a few years back when he was in Detroit and things. I think he's a better player now. You know, his range isn't quite what it was, but his hands and the way he swings the bat. You know, I thought, damn, man, well, this guy's like a new guy. So he's been a huge addition for us. And, you know, in this day and age, I think some of that gets overlooked. But there's those glue guys that when they show up, man, things happen, things change.
That's right.
And, John, you you're back in New York, right? It's been where you started. You were drafted in 1980. You were part of that 86 World Championship team.
Very small part.
Well, you were there. You were there, and also managed in the system with the Mets for many, many years. How was it like to be back in New York to feel the energy of the city? And the second part of that question is like, as a San Antonian, how is it like being like staying in New York for you? What a culture change! So, kind of describe that for us, please.
Well, it's funny, you know. When I first got here, you know, I was 21 when I made the team in 84. You know, they were like a rebuilding team, and I had a good spring, and they were looking for guys, right? And so I come up here, and I remember the we started on the ropes, but we opened up at home against the Expos, and I can remember the first day I was catching the home opener here at Shea. And it was Pete Rose was playing first for the Expo. He comes to the plate and like he's standing in the box and like somebody threw, I think it was a grapefruit or something, comes flying through. I'm going, where the heck am I, man? And you know, and even the hotel when we first got to New York off the road trip, you know, it was like the hotel. I mean, it was noisy. There are people everywhere. There's cars up on blocks out in the parking lot. I'm going, I said, I saw the movie Escape from New York, man, when I was younger. I said, this is it. So. I tell you what, now that I'm older and I got a better appreciation of things, I've enjoyed it so much more. I live close to the ballpark, so I don't have to drive around this place, you know. but it's definitely a different world, and you know, nobody knows it better than TC as long as he was here. You know, you just got to ride the emotional roller coaster here with him, and you got to have a thick skin. That's part of the reason I said that the bench job is a way to go, TC, because. You know, when you're managing here, now Carlos is managing, you guys are taking the shots. You know, the bench coach, he just kind of sneaks in and out. Maybe that's part of it.
The game has changed probably in a lot of ways since you were in the dugout for the Blue Jays leaving in 2018. What have you noticed most about the changes in baseball since you were last in the dugout?
Well, the iPads on the bench, probably. So the game is so much more advanced technically, technology wise, and things like that. That's kind of when I got back in. That was kind of used to have guys could go up and look at in between innings. They could look at their bats on computers, you know, up in the clubhouse, right? And then they kind of banned that when they got a little suspicious of that. But now they're on the bench. Everybody's looking at iPads, and instead of watching the game half the time, I'm going, what the heck? You know, I even catch myself glancing at him every now and then. So that's different. You know, it's probably, you know, the, you know, baseball really is a simple game, you know, when it gets down to it, right? But it's so advanced now. It just seems kind of odd at times that, you know, this game, you know, it's like football's, you know, X's and O's are everything, right? Baseball, I still think the game's going to lay itself out for you, you know, and how you want to react to it, you know, whether it's you want to hit and run, bunt, things like that, which are very rare nowadays. It's there for you if you want, or a pitching change, what have you. It's not like you're trying to, you're not going to outsmart a lot of guys in this game. On TC, I mean, you're not, you know, you know, if you pay attention to the game, you know, they say sometimes guys do too much on their gut instinct. And I don't buy that. I said, your eyes will tell you what's going on. You know, the pitcher's losing it, this and that, all that. And I think that's still big in the game, although it's, you know, that's debatable in today's game. But it's just, but, you know, you have to be able to adjust with it. There's no doubt about it. I just think with the technology and, you know me, I'm not very good with a computer anyway. So that's been a real battle, you know, to just get that thing up and running. But it's still the greatest game there is.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, like we said earlier, the teams that do the basic things right and have more firepower usually are going to be all right in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, and you, Mendoza, working with a first-year manager, you didn't really know Carlos at all before you got the gig. And talk to us about, like, your first interaction with him and what impresses you most about Mendoza as a first-year manager?
Well, yeah, I didn't know Carlos at all. Like you said, you know, I think my last year was in 18. That might have been his first year when he was the Yankees bench coach. And so I think I met him, right? But I never interacted with him. But what happened is I get a call from DeMarlo Hale one day. You know, DeMarlo was my bench coach in Toronto, you know, one of the best guys in the business, you know, and he called me and said, hey, I was talking to Mendoza. Can I give him your name? I said, yeah, sure. I'd love to. You know, this was after that thought crossed my mind, you know, a couple of weeks prior that, you know, maybe they'll hire somebody with experience. Right. So he, you know, he gave him my number, and then, Kevin Cash down in Tampa, the same thing, called me and said, hey, can I give him your number to Mendy? I said, yeah, I'd love to. And so we eventually talked and hit it off right away. You know, I mean, you can usually tell when two people hit it off without knowing each other, you know, and I, TC, the funniest part of all, we had a good conversation on the phone. Right. And then we hung up and I thought, you know what? I think a bench coach is supposed to organize spring training. Right. And I had never done that. Even when I was a bench coach in Kansas City, I never did that. Right. I was there for 3 years. So I said, you know, first year manager, he's got a new bench coach, and the bench coach can't. What the number one thing he wants is a well-run spring training. So I called him back and I said, hey, Manny, I got to tell you, man, I've never organized a spring training. I don't know if that's a good thing for you. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. Now there's coaches for that. And it turns out our guy that organizes it all used to pitch for me, Danny Barnes up at Toronto side. That's I said, perfect. So that's another thing off the list that I have to do, you know. Such a beautiful thing. Bench job. That's
awesome. But it must be great working alongside him. A great, amazing season so far. You guys have bounced back, so it's going to be exciting. I want to take you back to the couple of your former teammates back then. Daryl Strawberry, Dwight Gooden, they had their numbers retired this year by the organization, which was a great thing. You know both of those guys pretty well, John, going back to the 80s with them. What stories and memories do you have of Doc and Daryl that you like to share? And how great was it to see their numbers retired this year?
Yeah, well-deserved. You know, two wonderful guys, you know, that all the talent in the world, you know, and they both went through some, you know, tough times, right? You know, a lot of it obviously self-inflicted, you know, but, you know, two good guys at heart. Right. And they, you know, they weathered the storm. And I think they got recognized here, you know, for their accomplishments on the field, because they were two of the better players the Mets have ever had, you know, and the chance to see him come out here was pretty cool. But, you know, Daryl and I got drafted the first year, you know, that, you know, like you said, 1980, he was the number one pick. So he shows up to Kingsport, Tennessee, the first Well, actually, I signed in 3 days. He signed in took a month and a half, you know. But get this, I think he signed for the number one pick in the nation. I think the bonus was 230 grand or something like that. Right now it's like 10, 12 million or something. So, but anyway, he finally signs. It's like in the beginning of July. And, you know, of course, he gets there. There's a big press conference and the media everywhere. And, you know, his first game. And this little town of Kingsport, Tennessee, you know, little redneck town, you know, nobody's coming out. But when he showed up, and I think his first at bat, there must have been like 100 media people with, you know, cameras and or print media. He got a base hit and drove in a run his first at bat. I remember that well. And we became, you know, we became good friends, of course. And he took, you know, he was always a level above me. You know, and then, of course, he got there quick and had a great career numbers-wise. And you know what? He's turned it around, and it's he's persevered, you know. And then the thing about Doc, you know, Doc, the funny story, we were at our spring training little motel around Tampa Bay there. We used to have these – places we used to stay, you park your car right outside your room, right? So I was standing with about four or five guys one day, I remember, in this – this guy drives up in a souped-up Camaro, right? And on the license plate said Dr. K. And we're going, who is this guy? Come on, man, get me with that. 2 days later, when I think I might have even been catching him in the bullpens in spring training, I said, "That's Dr. K." I don't blame him; he got that right. So, and of course, then he went on to do some great things here with this. The organization. So, yeah, but like I said, both of them had their battles and they're doing good now. And it's great to see. And they deserve that recognition.
Yeah. And you actually have a great story with Doc. I mean, it was during the World Series and, you know, everyone could be used, especially in game 6 and 7. And I think you were warming up Gooden in the bullpen. And then something kind of interesting happened with some of the horses that were in there in the bullpen.
Yeah, well, yeah. Remember when that big comeback, you know, against the Red Sox, Game 6, you know, things started happening, so they called down to. And I want to say, I'm almost positive it was Doc. They said, "Get Doc up," right? But in the meantime, they had already brought the mounted police in there on their horses, you know, into the bullpen because they were going to go out on the field as soon as this game's over because, you know, everybody thought it was over, right? Everybody thought it was over, yeah. And then, sure enough, I'm pretty sure it was Doc. But And I even checked with a couple of reporters here where they were trying to verify it, but I don't know why I would think different. But anyway, every time he threw a pitch to me warming up, you know, because he threw so hard, and with the crack of my glove, these horses would jump off the ground and look around and all that, like they was gunshots, you know. They're used to that. But anyway, we went on to win that thing, and that's one of my greatest memories, you know, the funnest memories. Anyways, because you know, I say that because my mother's had horses her whole life. So I was around horses all her life and had nothing to do with winning the game. It's just, I'm around these horses.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. I mean, and who knows what's going to happen this year as we had Carlos Mendoza on. It's like the media, the fans, they start panicking. Like when the team leaves, like this road trip, you know, everyone's like gloom and doom. But as we talked with Mendoza about, it's like you never know how good a season is going to be. And this team has really come back. They've re-energized. So no one should panic. Just get on the train. Enjoy the ride because no one knows what's going to happen next year. Right. So right. Enjoy this ride. And that media is crazy. And the fan base is maniacal sometimes, you know. But
nobody can tell you more than that in D.C. But, you know, I never managed in this town. Right. You know, I experienced a brief playing career here. And so there's no place like, I mean, it's different here in Boston, you know. It's just different. So the grind and these guys had to answer questions after every night. And that's where, you know what, that's the toughest part of the job, I think, explaining everything you're having to deal with those guys, TC, huh? Before the game and then after the game. And that's, I think, probably what takes its toll on you. In a town like this, you know, there's no comparison. And I think that's where Mendy's done a great job, you know. And, you know, Mendy's got this great smile. I tell him all the time, hey, just smile at a man and kill him with kindness, man. They'll love you. At least the first year, anyway. Right, awesome. Right, T?
I'm going to throw it back to Terry, John. Thanks, man.
So, Gibby, you know, one of the things, obviously, I've managed in different spots. And, you know, the big question is, you know, what changes have you made from the last job to this one? So, I would hope that you're probably hoping that there's a managing job here in the near future for you again, What changes would you try to make from when you managed in Toronto to your next job?
Well, you know, I don't know what's it's ahead for me, to be honest with you, but I will tell you this. I've always viewed myself as being treat the guys like men. And I'll always, if I look back, I'd say, you know, I think I was fair to everybody. You know, I didn't, of course, some guys had more playing time and things like that. And you had your battles with certain guys, but I thought I was fair. I just think, you know, as you get older and you mature, you look back on things, you know, it's such a right in how you handle people, and sometimes you got to kick them. You know, we live in a day and age, you know, where everybody's, you know, you gotta, you know, smooth everything over, and everybody's got a psychologist. But sometimes, you know, a kick is the answer too, right? But so you look at those things. Well, could I handle this situation better? Maybe I could get it better. Those are probably the things. And the fact that, you know, we were talking about analytics a while ago. There is a lot of good new information out there that can help you. I think as far as, you know, we were talking about the three batter minimum, analytics is helpful in that area. You know, matching up your, you know, those three guys, you know, with all the, but overall, you know, strategy wise, you learn some things over time. But I think if you're fair to everybody, you know, I think out on top, just like I just told you a minute ago, man, that bench job is a pretty good job. So, man, yeah. Read between the lines.
You know, and I'll tell you, John, you know, and I knew you probably did too, but I'm telling you, there, you know, when I first started managing, when I first got my first job in Houston, Matt Galante, who had already been with the team for a long time, he was there, and I was talking to him about a bench coach, and he said, "You don't need a bench coach." He said, "You know, I've seen you manage. I managed against you in the minor leagues. You know, you don't need a bench coach." Well, I will tell you, the game progressed to the point where bench coaches now, as you know, I mean, years ago when you were a bench coach, when I first started, the third base coaches were the guys who got the jobs. The opening job, they were the ones who were being interviewed. And now it's the bench coaches, because that job has evolved to such a point where, you know, a lot of times, you know, after the manager makes a decision, the player comes out and he's all upset about something, it's the bench coach who goes over and calms that guy down. It's the bench coach who's the first guy that, you know, and so I think that job has really evolved. And I can see now why, you know, that has become such a big job. And I also know in some teams, I did it with Bob Guerin, but he handled all of the data that we got, you know, he put all of the scouting reports together. So I know that job has really evolved, and they got the right guy in New York. And I just want to wish you the best, and hopefully, you know, you guys get hot again and get right back really in the main hunt of everything, because that's when it's so exciting. So, hey, John, I know you got to go here pretty soon, but John's also got some questions from some fans. I know he wants to ask you.
All right, here we go. We're going to get to the questions right now, and I'll pull them up here now. First question comes from Mark from Toronto, and this is for both TC and for you, Gibby. Both of you are highly respected for your leadership abilities. Which individuals were some of the biggest influences on developing your leadership style, and what did they teach you? Gibby first, then TC.
Gosh, you know what? You know, you look back over at your career and the certain guys you play for that, you know, you take something from everybody, right? There's guys you like, certain guys you don't like. They got good qualities, good traits, or you play better under them for some reason because of the way they handle you. And, you know, I had some good ones. Chuck Killer was the first guy. He was my first manager after I got drafted. And then when I got into coaching, he was my roommate, actually, because he was still an advisor in the Mets organization. And he kind of had some rough edges about him, and he helped me out quite a bit, you know, on some things. Daryl Johnson, DJ, managed the 75 Red Sox back then. And he used to come around when I was managing the minor leagues, and he'd talk to the coaches as well as the players, you know. But they all touch you in a certain way. You know, I said earlier about TC, I don't think I've ever been around a harder working guy than him, and a guy that cared more about the playing the game right. You know, that rubs off on you, you know. There's Davey Johnson when he was managing New York. You know, Davey was didn't say much, but he was a very confident guy. So I think everybody, and there's guys I played for that I could care less about, right? it doesn't mean they're bad guys, but you didn't like the way they did it, or maybe they didn't, you know, they just weren't men's men type guys, you know? So you take something from everybody, I think, you know, discard some things, and then really comes down to what my personality is. And TC's person, we all have our own personality. And you gotta live that, and you gotta use that, because, you know, otherwise you're a phony, you know, and they read right through you. And in the end, you know, it comes back to how many cannons you got in the dugout. It always does.
You know, John, you're absolutely right. And that is the truth. That is exactly the truth. You take something from everybody. You know, I used to say, I'd listen to, you know, I played for Del Crandall in Albuquerque, and Del was a great manager, tough guy. But because he demanded the game being played the right way, but you learn stuff from him. I learned stuff, you know, when I first got to probably my main mentor is Jim Leland. And I watched him deal with players and stuff, but you know, there were also times I also saw him, like you said, you know, he could kick, you know, I saw him, I was 2 feet away when he and Bonds got into it. I was, you know, 3 feet away when he and Andy Van Slyke got into it. So, I mean, there were times that, hey, look, you got to take a stance. And so I saw how he handled players. I spent 30 minutes with Sparky Anderson one day talking about managing in the big leagues. I mean, you say, you know what, I'm going to remember that and I'm going to use that. And then obviously, you know, when I came back and got the job in New York after, you know, not managing for a long time, the one thing I said is I'm going to have some fun now. I'm going to enjoy the game now. I have, you know, I'm an intense guy. I had to play harder than everybody else to succeed in the game. And so, you know what, I'm going to enjoy it myself. And I thought that translated to the players, just as you said. You know, Walter Alston told me years ago, the players will take on the personality of the manager. Make no mistake about it. So, and I always thought, you know what, I could get everybody to play as hard as I did, I got a chance to win. Because we're going to play the game hard, we're going to run balls out, and we're going to do the little things. So, but I think you're right, John. I think it's just, you know, you take the things you learn, you use them, but you are absolutely right. You cannot change who you are, because the players, they will read right through you. And so just be yourself again.
Exactly.
Excellent. I got a question from our Instagram account. This comes from John Woodward. John, in 1986, you were called up after Gary Carter got injured, so clearly you weren't going to get a lot of playing time. That being said, you hit .474 that year. Do you?
Holy man! What the hell was that? In that team?
How could they ever play Carter again after?
Oh, the hell! How did he get back in the lineup? He sounds like he got Wally Pipped to me. That's all I can tell you.
Exactly.
John, do you think your career would have continued had you been on a team where there wasn't a Hall of Fame catcher in front of you?
No. You know what? I had opportunities after '88 in spring training, I got traded over to the Dodgers. DC was a manager, and I had playing opportunities, right? You know, our other catcher there, TC, played us every, you know, we alternated. Gil Reyes, and Gil had the better year, right? And so, you know what, my thing, I got there quick, struggled, and lost my confidence, and then really, you know, I forgot how to do it, right? And it's happened to many guys, and I'm always conscious of that now once I got into coaching, you know. But, no, I had plenty of opportunities. If I had produced, you know, people say injuries here. Yeah, everybody goes through injuries, but, you know, I can't use that as an excuse because, you know, that .474, that was just in a limited playing time. You look at my bubblegum card, it might say .174. Hey, but you know what, though? That doesn't matter nowadays. Batting average. I want to make a comeback. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, you had a four-hit game, didn't you also? Wasn't there like a four-hit game in September after the clincher and you hit a home run and got like a big night that night?
Yeah, well, I got caught up in the wave, man. That team was rolling.
We got just two more questions for you. This next one comes also from Instagram. Eric Soli asks, Gibby, what was it like to manage the Toronto Blue Jays, not once, but twice, and give us your most memorable moment as a Jay skipper?
Well, it's kind of unusual unless you win, you know. It's like I'm Billy Martin coming back, but, you know, Billy won, you know. So the fact that I went back twice, you know, Alex Anthopoulos took over the second time, and he was an old, you know, friend of mine. That's the way a lot of times it works. But I was pretty fortunate to do that. You know, the first go round didn't go real well, but we didn't have that many cannons either. You know, I'm not making excuses, but You know, that's back when the Yankees were the Yankees, the Red Sox were the Red Sox, you know. But the fact that I got a chance to come back, you know, is very unusual unless you've done something, you know. But in a lot of ways, too, I approached that second go-round, like TC was mentioning a minute ago, that he was going to enjoy it, you know, when he got to New York. And I kind of took the same idea. You know, I've done this before. I'm going to try to enjoy a little bit more, maybe, you know, lighten up a little bit with certain things. But, you know, the bottom line there is we acquired some better players. You know, we had Josh Donaldson. Batista was there the second go-round. And they were probably the two most despised guys in the league, but yet two of the better players in the league, right? And so we had some firepower in Encarnacion, Russell Martin. So we were much better, and my job was just to get the most out of them and get out of the way where I had to, right? But it had been such a long time since a team had won anything there or even played games that mattered in September. And we heard that, you know, I heard that year after year after year. And to finally be there, we won the division in 15, you know, trade deadline pickups. So that's my fondest moment there, you know, because, you know, the whole country came alive, right? And they told me all along, they told everybody, said, you know, if this team is relevant in September, watch what happens to the city and the country. But we were never relevant, you know, so we didn't know. And then finally we were, and that's what happened. And we exploded, the country exploded. And too bad, if we'd won a couple more games, I might have played TC in that World Series, but we couldn't get there. So, but that's my fondest memory there, finally being with the team there, that after all those years they were starved. You know, to be part of that.
Yeah, big season for you. Final question, also from Instagram, and this comes from Johnny A 125, and I'll have to do a little bit of self-disclosure. That's me. So my question, Gibby, is do you miss podcasting?
Yes and no. I miss sitting here BSing with guys, you guys like that. I don't miss trying to track down guests to come on the show.
That's what I know. I'm sure TC could relate to that as well. You know, that's not an, it's not an easy gig for sure, tracking guys down. But yeah, it was a, you know, we had a whole season and a quarter of another season. So yeah, each and every week it was great. The guests you got were great. Your insights were great. And it was very, it was very cool to be able to have that opportunity and that experience with you, John. But and yeah, you were a good podcaster. People liked you, man.
Well, hey, you got, hey, sometimes you throw some little BS around, you know, even if it's not always in your nature. Hey, people buy anything nowadays. You're crying out loud.
Awesome, awesome, man. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Hey,
TC and I might not even said a truthful word today, and people would never know that.
They wouldn't know the difference. That's right.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, listen, man, listen. Thanks again for being on, John, and all the best. We're rooting for you. I'll see you this weekend. I'm coming up. I've got SNY shows this weekend, and I've got that fan at Fanatics Fest at Javits Center, so I'll be watching close. So good luck.
All right, well, come on down, man. Come on down to that clubhouse. Okay, pal. You're always welcome. All right, boys. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Gibby. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Great talking with TC segment with Gibby. That was a lot of fun.
He is a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun to be around. And I tell you, you know, I've only met Carlos a couple of times, but he couldn't have done a better job in the selection of a bench coach than getting John Gibbons. First of all, successful manager, but a personable guy, knows players, respects them. They respect him. He brings that little piece of humor that you need when the times are tough and the stress is going on. John can lighten up any situation, and you need those kind of guys.
Yeah, he's king of the one-liners for sure. He knows how to diffuse any situation. And so it was great to have him on the segment today. Now it's time for the Tunnel to Towers Amazing Hero of the Week segment. This week we pay honor to U.S. Army Sergeant Brandon Adam. Let's go to that right now.
There was something very special about Paul. My friends used to call him St. Paul, and he felt a responsibility to serve. He just was so proud to be in the military and knew that he wanted to make this world better. He deployed 5 times. Now he was a major. He was in Mazar-e Sharif, which is in northern Afghanistan. I was about to take my boys, who were 8 and 6 at the time. The doorbell kept ringing. I went to open the door and say, like, I'll be there in a minute. Give me a second. And I saw, you know, the notification officers, and I shut the door because they asked to come in. And I said, no, you can't come in. And I shut the door. And then I like paused for a minute and said, you know, this is going to happen whether I open the door or not. So I better open the door. And, you know, then your life completely changes. When your spouse dies, all of a sudden you're like, there's no vision, there's no dreams anymore. We were relying on Paul's full pension. And so it was a struggle to provide a single family home for them. Tunnels to Towers was going to pay off our house. It's unbelievable. Like, you just don't believe that someone is going to do this for you.
That shocked me, and my jaw dropped when I heard. And it's so crazy to think about how generous this organization has paid our mortgage.
Having to know that I'll never have to pay a mortgage or rent, there are still days I wake up and don't believe that it's happened.
It's very hopeful to me that there are so many people who are willing to dedicate not only time but money to this wonderful organization.
Because if you just think about how many people had to donate to support these homes being paid off, it's a lot. You know, a lot of people have to make this happen, and it just makes us feel like there are people that know our stories, that appreciate our sacrifice, and that just means so much.
Join us in supporting our nation's heroes and their families now. It only takes $11 a month to make a positive impact.
We'll have another T2T Amazing Hero on next week's show. Terry, before we close the show, you're heading to New York this week along with the SNY Baseball Night New York crew, including Andy Martino, Sal Licata, Todd Zeal. You'll be appearing at Fanatics Fest on Saturday, August the 17th at the Javits Center in New York. So you have another busy weekend coming up.
I do. It'll be a little fun. We've got Baseball Night in New York a couple of nights, and then the Javits Center event, which is going to be really, really fun to do. You know, the unbelievable people that are going to be there. I'm looking forward to saying hi to some of the guys I haven't seen in a while. So it should be very, very fun. I hope there's a lot big turnout for it.
Yeah, I think there will be. Also on our next show, I know how you and then how Gibby used to like booking guests, but you have lined up somebody pretty cool for next week.
Yeah, I have. I've become very, very close with one of the former Mets, and another guy was a former Major League manager, Lee Mazzilli. Lee's one of my favorite people to talk baseball with. Not only was he a good player, but he got the game. He understood the game. Great storyteller, great energy still today. So I asked Lee if he'd be on the show, and he said he would do it. So we'll have Lee on next week as our guest.
And he's a new granddaddy as well. So I've been following him on Instagram, and he's singing Italian songs to his little grandbaby there. And I can't wait to for that show next week. So we will be back next week with another episode here. You can follow Terry on X and Instagram at @TerryCollins_10. And for those of you on Facebook, you could follow the show there, the Terry Collins Show. Follow me on X and Instagram at John Arezzi. Make sure to subscribe now to the Terry Collins Show wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and on YouTube. Until next time, this is John Arezzi for Terry Collins. Have a great week, everyone.